powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll give you your Felix game of the night. Got some NFL headlines for you in about 10 minutes. But first, this is something that we didn't get to before that we really wanted to. The Brock and Salk podcast, which you can find at brockandsalkpodcast.com, they touched briefly on this question of who's going to be the last man standing, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, or John Schneider? It's a really interesting question. I mean, if you look through history, every situation is unique. But my knee-jerk reaction to that question is that it'll be Russell Wilson. An organization typically doesn't give up on its star player unless there's some sort of weird circumstance. I mean, guys, even Troy Aikman, he had a couple of coaches. Montana had a couple of coaches. Steve Young. I mean, plus age is always a factor, too. What do you guys think is the biggest factor in determining who the last man standing will be? What do you think, Stacy?
I think if it is on field versus drafting mistakes. If on the field there isn't as much of an issue and Russell Wilson still plays well, then I don't think he's going anywhere, particularly if all of this is still happening and he's playing under his current contract and not under one that would be more. And that's especially a prevalent point if the salary cap stays around where it is rather than go drastically down. I think if you see more draft misses or missteps in other position groups, then it's hard to put that on Russell Wilson.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I would think that, guys, you know, it's really easy to sit here and say, well, who has the longest contract, right? Who has the longest contract with the team? And that is Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. His contract is going to last longer than Pete Carroll and John Schneider's at this point. But I also think that there is a really interesting scenario here where, you know, Pete Carroll's contract is going to be up in 2021. And depending on how things are going, I don't see Pete Carroll just simply walking away from the game unless he was to win a Super Bowl or something to that nature. And so if they're on the cusp of doing something, I think that, you know, Pete's going to have an opportunity to stay for as long as he wants, unless things start to go backwards. And the reason why I think that there could be a possibility that Pete Carroll could be the last man standing out of the three is you look at Pete, and I think John is somebody that he's been in lockstep with, but John has also gone out himself and has been interested in the Green Bay Packers job at one time. I think that might be the only job that he would truly be interested in, you know, to leave Seattle for, but he has shown interest in trying to leave before. Pete Carroll, though, he has the most power outside of Jody Allen. He has the most power within that organization. And so, you know, I think there's another aspect of it is how much is Jody Allen really holding Pete accountable, right? Like, I think that that's another interesting dynamic there, because what we did know with Paul Allen is that he made moves. He made things happen over the course of Pete Carroll's tenure here, whether he liked him or not. Paul, you know, really tried to hold Pete accountable in certain things and really demand answers. He wasn't somebody that was there involved in every little aspect, but he wanted answers. And I don't know the level in which Jody Allen is involved with the team. And so there might be, you know, a power dynamic there where Jody is saying, look, Pete, I trust you, and therefore I'm going to trust the decisions that you make. You have carte blanche of the team and all that, and not really have that same level of accountability that was once there. It's not to knock Jody at all. I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying that I think that there could be that level of supreme trust with Jody Allen, and would she be willing to make that move to, you know, fire Pete Carroll, let go of Pete Carroll, and move on with somebody else as Russell Wilson still as the quarterback? I think that that's, you know, an interesting way to look at it.
Look, if they're cruising along at 10-6, 11-5 for the next 5 years, even without a Super Bowl win, I don't think anybody's getting fired. Right? I think they're all going to be here. I mean, Russell Wilson, if they're making the playoffs, he's probably playing well. Pete Carroll, I mean, you can't fire a coach over 11-5, nor a GM. So if they keep up with this clip, I think they're all going to be here until Father Time just comes in and says to either Pete or Russell, you can't play anymore, or there's an injury issue, or something like that. If something goes wrong and they start turning in like a 7-9, 6-10 season or two, and it's because of, say, missed draft picks or Russell's terrible or what, you know, whatever it may be, that situation will probably take care of itself. I think that the organization, because a great quarterback, a franchise quarterback, is tougher to find than a GM or a head coach. I think you stick with the quarterback longer if you can, assuming that he's healthy. But for right now, I mean, all three of them feel like they're pretty darn safe, don't they?
I would think so, right? Going along with that same premise, Tom, I'm going to throw one thing out there. There's one thing that we know about Russell Wilson, and again, I just thought of this, is like one thing I know about Russell Wilson is he is the ultimate competitor. Like, you talk about Michael Jordan and personalities, yeah, they're not the same, but in terms of a competitor, Russell is about as fierce of a competitor as you're going to find. I'm just going to tell you this right now, 11-5 perpetually where they're at right now over the next 2-3 years is not going to be okay with him. I think Russell is going to have a serious problem if they hold to that standard. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what direction that would go in, if then Russell would be frustrated with the organization and want to move on, or it becomes an Aaron Rodgers, Mike McCarthy situation. But I'm just thinking about it right now, and Russell wants to win a Super Bowl. Like, he wants to feel like there is this organization is doing everything they humanly can to make that happen. And so I don't know how that plays out over the next couple of years. And Tom, normally I would say that, yeah, if they're staying successful, they're getting to the playoffs, they're getting 10-win seasons. But knowing Russell Wilson, that's just not going to be enough for him. He wants to win it all.
But does that mean that he's going to force his coach or his GM out? I mean, where does the accountability lie if they keep going 11-5 and getting ousted in the second round of the playoffs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, my question to you would be, where would that accountability be after this season, right? Like, you asked that question. You know, obviously we wouldn't know down the line, but I would say that Russell Wilson up this last year played unbelievable ball, right? I think Pete and John have – I think Pete Carroll did a great job coaching guys, with a roster that they had. I think he has an unbelievable culture that he's been able to get guys to perform better than what they are, and they've been able to win despite not having a great defense. But I think that, you know, again, I this just came to my mind, so this is not a well thought out conversation that I'm having here. I'm just spitballing with you. I'm just telling you, Russell's going to have a really hard time if that is the case.
How much do you guys think that public opinion is going to factor in here? Because we always joke about how on the East Coast, that feels like it carries more weight because fans just get a little more unruly. And if they don't like a guy, owners are going to find out pretty quickly they don't like a guy. They're not afraid to boo a star. If I had to guess, 90% of the public opinion around Seattle is very favorable of Russell Wilson and believes that they don't trust him enough, that he doesn't play enough. And if anything, blame, when there is blame, tends to fall toward front office decisions or coaching decisions, not Russell Wilson. I mean, look at Super Bowl 49. Super Bowl 49, the most infamous loss in Seahawks history. Well, one of them, certainly. ended with a quarterback throwing an interception, and it's seen as a coaching decision. And I don't disagree with it, but that's wild. So, I mean, how much do we think that that could factor in this too? Because people are growing tired of Russell Wilson, and they shouldn't be. He's just getting better and better.
You know what? I don't think that public opinion will sway front office moves one way or the other. Out here, I mean. But there is, I still think that there is a sensitivity about it. I mean, I don't think that there's going to be the same groundswell where, I mean, we were talking to Vaughn McClure before, who covers the Falcons, and he was telling us why they just, the Falcons, went out and got Todd Gurley. It's to appease the Georgia Bulldog fans. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Would the Seahawks ever make a move like that? No. John Schneider and Pete Carroll make moves, and they explore, they do their due diligence on everything on the basis of one thing, winning. That's it. They don't make, I don't think they make sentimental moves. I mean, they bring back Bruce Irvin because I think that they, he can, or because they think he can contribute, right? Was he old, was he here in the old guard? Yes. But they wouldn't have brought him back if they didn't think he could contribute. I think that these guys are all business. I don't think that public perception sways them.
I think that the only way that public perception sways is if something negatively goes wrong and Pete Carroll then becomes under fire. I think, Pete, there's been a interesting sentiment that has developed here. You know, Danny O'Neill wrote an article last year saying how Pete Carroll doesn't coach to the strength of his team. He coaches like he still has the Legion of Boom. I think that that sentiment has been developing. And so if you don't see improvement on the defense, you don't see improvement, you know, in terms of, you know, overall strategy of their team, I think that that's something that could, you know, come together here as you look at Pete Carroll on his second to last year of his deal. His deal is up in 2021, and he's one of the highest paid coaches in the league, right? I think he's getting paid like, you know, $10, $11, $12 million, somewhere in that range. I mean, he's getting paid a lot of money. And so I think that there is that level of, okay, you're in year three of your rebuild. Where are you at and where are you progressing to? I think that this is a very critical year to kind of set the stage for this conversation that we're having right now. And I would love for all three of these guys to be here. I think that the most likely answer is that Russell Wilson is still a part of this organization and is the last man standing. But we'll see.
I think I agree with you on that one. Do you guys want to – oh, go ahead. No, I forgot we have NFL headlines. I'm excited for these two.
Yeah, let's do it. Seahawks reportedly interested in Carlos Hyde if they can't get something done with Devontae Freeman. Hyde's had himself a nice career, too, starting out with the San Francisco 49ers, of course. I think I would still rather have Freeman, though, if I could choose between the two. Hyde's a nice runner, but Freeman still, if I'm looking at an option for a second running back, I mean, knowing Petey likes unique characteristics, different things he can do with different guys, I think Freeman serves those needs a little bit more than Hyde does. Would you guys agree? What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that statement right there. And I think when you talk about adding you add versatility to your running back group, that's what Freeman does. Carlos Hyde is a good running back. I mean, he ran for over 1,000 yards last year with the Houston Texans. To me, he's very similar to Chris Carson. Now, would you be mad if you had two Chris Carsons on the team? I don't think so. But I think when you're talking about versatility, Rashad Penny brought a little bit of that, and you were starting to see some of that blossom before he got injured, being involved in the screen game. Devontae Freeman can actually do more than just be a really good screen game running back. You can use him out wide. You can use him in choice routes. There's a lot of things that he can bring to the table. So I think Carlos Hyde is the safe choice. I think Devontae Freeman is the more dynamic choice.
Interesting. I'm looking at a player comparison on here. And on paper, in some cases, Hyde looks like the better player. But Freeman has just had those bursts that you've seen, the potential of what he can be. And you've seen like, well, what if he's that guy again? And I don't know about you guys. Did you guys feel like after talking to Vaughn McClure that he felt confident that Freeman could take a step forward and could bounce back?
Yeah. I feel like he definitely felt that way, and he backed him even personally, talking about, you know, how determined he is to be able to help out any team no matter where he is. I think McClure definitely talked him up. Did you?
Yeah, I do. And also the other thing that we have to realize, too, is, yes, there were injuries, but also the Atlanta Falcons' offensive line and running game over the last two seasons has been awful. So I don't really put this all on Devonta Freeman in terms of the lack of production. Of course, the injuries are concerning, but I think that he's still a very good explosive running back that just needs to get back into a good system again.
All right, the next story here, there was a report out that the Cowboys offered Dak Prescott a contract worth more than $35 million a year, and Dak turned it down because he wants $45 million in the last year of his deal. Boom. $45 million in the last year of his deal? What's Russell getting in the last year of his deal?
I don't think he's getting $45 million. Now, here's the thing.
By the way,
is,
the Cowboys came out and shot this down. I don't know if they shot it down in total, but they came out and they said that at least part of this was not true.
Guys, $45 million to want that in the last year of your contract doesn't make any sense. You know what that means? That means you're either getting cut or you're getting traded. You're not getting – no player under the current constraints of the cap is going to get paid $45 million. Not a chance. So what that means is you're backloading your contract, and anytime you're in a backload of your contract situation, that means you're either going to get your deal restructured or you're going to get traded or cut. And that's – it's as simple as that. So – for Chris Sims to come out with this report, I mean, you're not helping yourself, man. I think that this is just another ridiculous contract conversation that gets had with some of these premier quarterbacks.
I could see wanting what seems like a pretty ridiculous number to us now when you're thinking 5 years down the road. If the salary cap were increasing a pretty consistent percentage, I think what we're wondering now is what's the effect of COVID-19 going to have on the salary cap for next year, and how long could it take if it goes down? How long could it take for that to come back up? If there were absolutely no pandemic going on, it wouldn't seem as ludicrous. I wouldn't do it if I was the Cowboys, but it wouldn't seem ludicrous. I think what teams are worrying about now is, well, what if the salary cap's $150 million down from $198 next year? And what if it takes a couple years to get back up to $200 or more? Then $45 million seems like quite a big hit.
In your opinion, do you guys think that the ongoing negotiations between Dak and the Cowboys are more or less contentious than what we saw a year ago with Russell and the Seahawks?
I think it's less contentious. It's been all over the board. Yeah, I really do. I mean, here's the thing. It was jam-packed into 2.5-3 weeks, right? But I think there was a lot of contention that was thrown around and a lot of I don't think that that contract negotiation was all that pretty. Now, were there damaged relationships there? Ultimately, no, you're able to get past it. But, you know, with the Cowboys, you kind of look at it as just like a sideshow anyways. So when you hear this conversation go back and forth between Dak and the Cowboys and this and that, to me, it's really nothing new, I guess I would say. And I just think that when you're the Cowboys and you're Dak Prescott, the one thing that I can't pinpoint here is I can't pinpoint who's being reasonable. Because if I'm Dak Prescott, I think what Russell Wilson did and how he handled it was very clear and very to the point. What is Dak trying to get accomplished here? I think that's my question. Does he still want to be a Cowboy, or is he looking to get a big payday? And if either one, I can respect. He just hasn't been very clear with what his intentions are. There's been a ton of rumors about what he's asking for, but I don't really understand what his intent is.
I think the problem with the Cowboys is it goes two ways. I think Dak is asking for way too much. On top of that, the Cowboys are unsure as to whether or not they want to commit to him at all. When it came to the Seahawks, I think the Seahawks wanted to commit to Russell, except they weren't sure how much money they could allow him, right? Because, you know, salary cap, so forth. It wasn't a question of whether they wanted him there. I think they did. It was just a question of how much money can we allot to the quarterback. In Dallas, it feels like, well, you know, we'll pay you a certain amount, but we don't want to commit to you. And on the other side of that, he's like, yeah, I should be the highest paid player in the league. I mean, that's a total disconnect there.
If you have that big disconnect there, to me, then it's on nobody, right? Like, that's not a contentious contract negotiation on my side. As I view it, I just think it's two guys that are just completely not willing to be at the table. And if I'm the Cowboys, I fully agree with their move. Dak Prescott should not be getting paid more than Russell Wilson. He should not be getting more than $35 million. So them offering 33, 32, and the likes of Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, I think is more than fair for what Dak Prescott has done in this league. Now, on the flip side, from a player's perspective, if I'm Dak Prescott, I don't want to sign my deal until I know what Patrick Mahomes is getting, because therefore I can then earn more money. So I agree with you, Tom. I think they're on two opposite ends of the table, and I don't know if they're ever going to get this done.
All right, coming up next, we'll tell you about tonight's Felix game. It's Felix week all week long on the show, on the station. Coming up next, though, there's a wide receiver out there that might be able to make a huge difference on this team, if only he's allowed to. Let's talk about that. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
All right, tonight we got the Felix complete game shutout versus Tampa from May 27th, 2015. I believe that was another day game. I thought I was in the office the day that I watched that again. We talked about it yesterday. Former pitching coach here, Carl Willis, said that for games that seemed meaningless, like a random day game against the Tampa Bay Rays, that was always when Willis would get really worried about Felix, but on occasion he turned in starts like that. May 27th, 2015, complete game shutout versus the Tampa Bay Rays. All right. Excuse me. I said that before, that there's a player that could really help out the Seahawks and really let Russ cook. And we got a little glimpse at him last year. First, I want to play this cut from Pete Carroll from his Flying Coach podcast the other day about how he gets excited about players. Go ahead and roll it.
I'm a real victim to that now. I'm such an optimist that I kind of think that, you know, I see something that really excites me about a guy, and I want to, you know, I don't have to see like him play great all the time. If I can see enough stuff, then I think I can tap into it. And I'm a little bit of a victim of that, you know, in recruiting and all that, because I am maybe too optimistic about that. Basically, they pretty much are what they are, and then you develop them, you know, and you try to add too. But I falter there.
All right, for me, the guy that I get overly hopeful for, who I only saw a little bit of last year, Joshua Gordon. I want that guy back on this team in the worst way. Think about just what you saw out of him last year. Critical third down situations. He was right there making every single play, and then he gets suspended again, and away we go. But if for some reason he ends up getting reinstated in the same way that Alden Smith just got himself reinstated, don't you think that, Jake, I know that you mentioned before that you think the Seahawks might not wait too long on this, but what if they didn't wait? What if they just chased him down and they made this a reality if the league allowed for it? What do you think?
Well, I think it would be interesting to have Josh Gordon back. I think one of the things that you are concerned about is something that we brought up from the very beginning, is the reliability factor. And yes, the rules against marijuana are no longer there, so it would be beneficial to Josh Gordon in that sense that you're not having to worry about that particular situation. But Josh Gordon in his past, that's not the only drug that he struggled with, right? And so to me, there's certain things that you constantly worry about Josh Gordon. But in terms of the talent, in terms of how he fit into the building, how he got along with Russell Wilson and the chemistry that they developed, I mean, yeah, I would love to have Josh Gordon back and to add him along with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Greg Olsen, Will Disley. I think that you're really talking about a really dynamic offense. And you just saw just a small flash of what Josh Gordon, no pun intended, because his nickname is The Flash, of what he can bring to the table for you. And so, to me, I think that that would be something that I don't know if the team has any influence over that or if it's the player that individually has to go through that process and has to, you know, do everything himself. Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you this, if it was up to the team and if the team could fast track it or could help Josh Gordon, they would be doing everything in their power to make that happen because they had nothing but positive things to say about Josh Gordon being in their building.
So you think if Josh Gordon was reinstated, the Seahawks wouldn't hesitate to have him back in at least
yes.
for training camp? They would bring him back on the roster right away?
For sure. For sure. You talk about always compete. Yeah, absolutely. You're bringing Josh Gordon back.
Now, you guys remember last time when they first got him, they claimed him off waivers, and they were like, what, 27th mm-hmm. in line to be able to do that? He fell to them. Right. So after what he did last year,
Jake's
just in that
conspiracy theory.
Well, let's put that aside for a second. I'll come back to that because I forget what that theory was. The rest of the league got to see Gordon in action, at least for a couple of games. Do you think that there would be a greater market for him now than there was at that point when he basically fell into the Seahawks' lap?
Maybe there might be a market for him, but it wouldn't be a large market. I think it would be a very, very small market. And the Seahawks, they have all the advantage in the situation. Josh Gordon has stayed in the Pacific Northwest. There's zero reason for him to do that. He's not from there. That's not typically where he works out. And so for him staying in the Northwest, to me, is a very positive sign that he wants to come back to the Seahawks, that he is staying near that area. And I don't really think that he wants to go anywhere else. I really do believe that he genuinely enjoyed his time here in Seattle with Pete Carroll, with Russell Wilson. It's just a matter of, you know, can he stay for a full season? And if he can, I think he could be a pretty dynamic playmaker for them. There's just a lot of questions about
him. Yeah, I think he's been totally, and all of that's fair. Just to echo Jake, he sent like quite a few posts about being in the Pacific Northwest. And I think player interest is one of the most overlooked things when it comes to free agency. And he seems, from the outside, very interested in staying with Russell Wilson and with the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, think about that trio of wide receivers right there. I mean, Colin came on yesterday, Cowherd, and he kind of poo-pooed what they had at wide receiver. But DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Josh Gordon, plus whatever else they end up with, maybe one of their draft picks or Will Disley at tight end. I mean, those are some serious weapons. Whether you know it or not, you're letting Russ cook at that point with those guys.
You are, and let me bring this other thing up, and I want to ask Curtis, actually, who is the producer of the Professor show. Clayton came out and said that, you know, according to sources, that Wilson has been advocating for Antonio Brown. Did he say that today or was it yesterday, Curtis? Do you remember?
I believe it was, well, today we had the conversation about Josh Gordon, so if I remember correctly, it was earlier today.
Okay, so you add on top of that, guys, you know, you have Josh Gordon out there. There's still Antonio Brown out there. And I know that Antonio Brown has been under a lot of scrutiny for what he's done, and rightfully so. But that is another name that is out there that I think has interesting connections, you know, to the Seahawks in terms of a dynamic playmaker that they could add here late in the game. What do you think about that? What is your guys' first take or first thought of that?
You guys know that meme of Jay-Z? It's like a GIF where he's looking real nervous. He's wearing glasses and he's kind of rocking back and forth. like looking anxious. I think that would be every Seahawks fan watching this wide receiver room every week. It wouldn't be like, are they going to be healthy? It's like, oh my God, everything's perfect. They have big playmakers in there, but will they be suspended or not? Will they be on the roster? Just rocking back and forth. Like, all right, last week was great, but what's going to happen this week? That's what I imagine.
It'd be like the Raiders were depending on him last year when they got him. I mean, that was a big trade. So that turned into a disaster for them, obviously. If you're bringing in Antonio Brown here, I mean, I don't know what the finances would be there, but first I would demand a complete psychological profile of him just to see if he's okay. And then I'd probably want to, like, yeah.
Yeah, can we explore this and sum it up as well? Because we're coming up against the clock here. I think that this is an interesting discussion because with Antonio Brown, for me, there's a couple things I think stand out with him along with Josh Gordon, and you weigh out the pros and cons of that situation. I think it's really interesting, but I do agree that if you want to make a late addition splash, whether it's Josh Gordon or Antonio Brown, gosh, it's got to make you feel like that offense becomes a juggernaut at that point, don't you think?
All right, Josh Gordon or Antonio Brown, or both. We'll sum it up next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
That wait is over.
They're coming away, baby.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
Just imagine it for a second, Seahawks fans. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, etc., etc. Think about that. Whether you like Josh Gordon or maybe you like Antonio Brown, maybe you dislike both of them. I don't know, but just picture that for a second, okay? Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon, in addition to what you already have on this team. I'm going to tell you one reason among many why that's not going to happen. We talked all day long about how Pete Carroll steadfastly will keep his offensive philosophy the way it is. Bringing in both Brown and Gordon, in addition to the guys that they already have, maybe even add in Will Dissly there, would force him. You know, Russell would have to throw the ball like 40 or 45 times if that were the case. You can't run the ball like you're doing right now and leave those guys just running around the field doing nothing all day. You would have to change your offensive philosophy in that case. And that's not going to happen. I would say pick one and go with it. Jake?
Yeah, I definitely understand on that sentiment, Tom. But when you talk about potentially upgrading your roster, just think about this for a second from Josh Gordon at first. Okay, you add both players. Well, how is that going to work? You got David Moore. You've got John Ursa. Well, let me stop you right there. Josh Gordon is going to cost you less to the organization than David Moore is right now. David Moore, $2 million is what he's going to cost you if he remains on the team. Josh Gordon is going to be less than $1 million. So I think that there would be incentive there to add Josh Gordon. Antonio Brown, I mean, he's one of the best receivers to ever play the game. Now, I do agree with you, Tom. You have to be very, very, and I mean very confident about where Antonio Brown's head is at currently. And I think that would be something that, gosh, you'd really have to do your homework on. But in terms of just adding the player, oh, my word. I mean, that's a pretty dynamic group right there if you're just looking at it from those four receivers. That would be dynamic.
Nah. Do you guys think that Pete Carroll is tempted? Because Pete Carroll loves an athletic freak. He loves it.
Oh, the temptation's there. It has to be.
It's absolutely there. Absolutely. When you ask him about his favorite players.
What would he do with those guys,
Stacey? Heard Dory do this once. What couldn't he do? Anything. Throw a 50-yard bomb. Throw him one pass a game and get a touchdown.
But he wouldn't want to do that. Like, how would you use Metcalf, Lockett, Brown, and Gordon?
However you want. Put him out there. No, as Curtis was saying during the break, you go out there, you run 35 times, Tom. That's how. That's how you use them.
You have to adapt. You have to adapt. If you're going to go down that route, you are signifying that you are willing to adapt and you're not going to throw the ball 50 or 40 times a game, guys. That's not what it's going to signify. But you are going to put the ball in the hands of your quarterback early in the game, and you're going to be an aggressor on offense rather than sit back and try and control the game the first half, the third quarter, and then just keep it close enough so that Russell Wilson can come back and bring this team back, you know, in a two-minute drill. That wouldn't be the overall philosophy at that point. And so I think it would be at odds with itself, but would you really care at that point when you've got an arsenal like that? I mean, here's one thing I would say. When the Seahawks in 2012, 13, 14, when they came off the bus, right, to enter the stadium, you knew what was going to happen. The opposing team and fan base knew what was going to happen and what type of game was about to happen. It was physical. They had superstar talent, superstar players, and it was going to be a tough out with the Seattle Seahawks. You know, right now, over the last two seasons, I think people have great respect for the program and the organization, but you're not looking at that roster up and down and saying, oh, man, we got to play the Seahawks today. But you make that addition, yeah, you're going to definitely put some fear into the NFC West. You're going to put some fear into the Los Angeles Rams, the Arizona Cardinals, and the 49ers. If DeAndre Hopkins can send shockwaves through the NFL and through the NFC West, imagine what those two additions would do.
How hungry are those guys? That's what I'd want to know. Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse and Golden Tate. I mean, guys like that were unproven earlier in their careers. They were hungry to go out there and make life miserable for unsuspecting teams. Gordon might be hungry. Brett Brown might be hungry too. Just to say, hey. You know, I'm here to prove everybody wrong. I want to go out and I want to win a championship and dispel all the, you know, all the talk about me.
It could be a last chance for these guys, though.
Sure. Yeah, right. And that could be great motivation for them. I'm just looking historically. You start packing. It's a weird thing to say, but if you start packing too much all-star talent in one place, like I remember like the 2011 Philadelphia Eagle dream team that had like Anamdi Asamoah and Dominique Rodgers-Camardi and all these guys back there, they stunk. They were terrible. I think there's something to be said for chemistry amongst players that I would take over just Pro Bowl-type talent. I think you go with Pro Bowl talent on your fantasy roster, but not your actual roster.
And that's a really good point. And here on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, we got a text from the 206 and said, honest question, is this even in the realm of reality? Actually, yes. I think this is in the realm of reality. And now you have to make that question in which Tom just said, do you overload on talent in which you have the ability to do? Or do you sit back and say, there might be too much of a good thing here and we just need to pick one, right? Like, if we're going to make this move, we're not going to do two. We're just going to pick one. And I think that could be a realistic thing. But they could, if they wanted to, and it would actually cost them less with Josh Gordon if they made that addition for their roster. Antonio Brown, to me, is that big, hey, we're putting all our chips down, and we're saying, boom, we are going for it. This is a risk. But this could be a very high reward situation because Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers to ever play the game. Before he went on this crazy, you know, he lost his mind for a second deal this last season, he was one of the best receivers in the game and still has that physical ability. So that's where they have to do their homework and assess the situation with Antonio Brown if they ever get to that point. You know, if they ever get to that point, is he back to his normal routine? Is he working out? Is he, you know, focused? And I'll say this. I think Antonio Brown's one of those elite competitors. Like when his mind is focused on football, I think he's one of those guys that you definitely want on your team because you know that all he cares about is, performing at his best and winning football games. And so if you can dial that guy in the right way, he's worth having. But it's a scary proposition. There's no question about it.
I mean, the thing is, too, it's that point of risk that Jake just talked about, that with at least one of those guys in Josh Gordon, it's very low risk. It's pretty much a replica of what they did last year. You bring him on. You have to be wary of how much you incorporate him, knowing that he may not be a steady presence there. But when he performs well and when he's out there, he can make a difference at his best. And so we lament those teams, Tom, those dream teams that didn't work out, because of all that you invested in them, and because it's a shame that you spent that much money in free agency or on extensions or whatever to get a guy signed and then it didn't end up working. Can you imagine an opportunity to have both of these guys on your roster for a fraction of what they would have been years ago? I mean, you would never normally have that opportunity. So it's a bit different. I don't know. It's tempting. The temptation is absolutely there.
You're 100% right in that the Seahawks wouldn't pay as dearly as, say, the Eagles did, because the Eagles had so much more invested. I'm just talking about at the end of the day, like, would it work? Would it work on the field? You're right, it wouldn't kill them. They could just kick them both out the door and probably be fine. But would it do
more harm? You're
trying
to play it too safe. You're being such a suit right now, Tom.
You're either competing or you're not. Are we going for it or are we not?
Exactly.
Come on.
It's about the bottom line.
Come on.
Put that Empire Strikes Back shirt down.
Empire!
Put it down, Tom.
Get it away.
Come on, you bougie.
Tom, close us out.
You boozy shoe.